Hello, welcome to another episode of Papa Bear Hikes.
Today I have with us author of the upcoming book, The Essential Skills of Wilderness Survival, Jason Knight. Welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Well, thanks for having me.
Here in your words, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been teaching about wilderness survival and outdoor skills for over 20 years now. It's been really a lifelong passion of mine. I'm the co-founder of Alderleaf Wilderness College, where we've been running wilderness skills courses for the last 16 years. I worked at other outdoor schools and worked as a wildlife biologist before that. And one of our main courses have been training folks to be teachers at other wilderness survival schools around the country. So we've had quite a few students come through our 9-month courses, but then now our big courses are weekend courses for the public, where anybody can come join and learn wilderness skills, whether it be wildlife tracking or wild edible plants, mushroom foraging, or wilderness survival. And we do a bunch of private trainings for a lot of groups. Like, we do survival training for the Department of Ecology, Seattle Mountaineers, various groups. And we also have an online course on survival skills as well. And now we have this book, which is something that folks have been asking for a long time. So it's a little bit about my background. I mean, I worked as a wildlife biologist for a while, did mountain lion studies for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, worked for a number of wilderness schools on both the East Coast and the West Coast. As part of my degree. And I said, I loved this stuff since I was a kid. I was in scouts. I had an uncle that was a tremendous outdoorsman, and stumbled across a bunch of wilderness survival books in high school. And that kind of got me down this path to where I am today.
Yeah. I spent a number of years as a volunteer with the Boy Scouts.
Right on.
Yeah. What a great place to get started, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic. You know, I was lucky. I had really good scout leaders as a kid, and we did a lot of camping trips, a lot of hiking. I got outdoors a bunch, there's so much more to it too, which has been like a big part of my journey since then, is like, you can go so far with learning about wild edible plants and their medicinal uses. You can go really far down the wildlife tracking journey and trailing animals. And I did a ton of work as a wildlife biologist with, you know, motion cameras and collared animals. And it's similarly with survival skills. Like, there's so much further you can go with like primitive skills and flint napping arrowheads and building bows and making baskets and fish spears and all kinds of things. So yeah, I think the Boy Scouts were, for me, they were great for getting me inspired. And then it just went from there.
You ever talk to any of your leaders from when you were a youth?
You know, they've since passed on, but I do stay in touch with a couple of the other folks that were in my group. And, yeah. And we've also done some like volunteer work for our local scout groups, you know, doing skills classes for them and things like that. And we've hosted groups up here at our campus. So yeah, I like staying connected. They're obviously a much smaller organization than what they used to be. But they're still doing great things with kids for sure.
Yeah. To me, it's flattering to me. When I hear from somebody who was in my scout troop that they went out and did something, or they were inspired, and they took some of the skills they learned in scouts and are using them. Mm-hmm. It's a good feeling. And I'm sure you know how that feels with what you've been doing for the past number of years, that feeling that, hey, I taught something to somebody that's of value, mm-hmm. that they're going to use, not just for survival, but to enhance their experience in the outdoors.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love hearing from our former Alderleaf students, like so many of them that are now working as biologists on different projects, whether it be mountain lions on the Olympic Peninsula or being a bear biologist down in California. We have other students that are teaching at other outdoor schools or at parks around the country, or even started their own schools in different parts of the world. So it's super gratifying hearing those stories of how someone takes something that you shared with them and really ran with it and impacted their community.
And with the Alderleaf school, what kind of students do you find you're attracting there? Are these people that have no outdoor experience, or are they bringing some experience with them?
We get a really healthy mix of both. Like, we have a lot of folks who've spent their life in the outdoors, camping and hiking or recreating, as well as folks who are new to getting into the outdoors. Like, they've grew up in an urban area or suburban area. They're now just starting to spend more time doing hikes and going camping and wanted to get some of these skills. So we get a blend of both, and I think it's because a lot of what we teach, it complements other outdoor skills, and if you're just getting started, it's great stuff to start with as a foundation.
And I ask because this has been, I guess we can even go as far as calling it a rant I've been on for the past few weeks, there was an incident, and you may have heard this, up in New Hampshire, where there were a couple of hikers up there that were stranded, and they were rescued. They weren't prepared, and they were issued tickets and fined. And the debate is, how far do we go with this? You know, local people with the whole, I don't want my tax dollars paying for people who aren't prepared to go into the woods. And then going on the other side of that equation and saying, well, people like us who do have the knowledge, who have the experience and do the research, prepare ourselves, do we now have to be afraid of this? And when we start talking about, you know, well, the 10 essentials and what you need to bring with you, I kind of look at it the way I sometimes see Leave No Trace. Are we preaching to the choir? Are we getting this message to the people that really need to hear it?
Right, right. You know, I think our just culturally in general, we're very disconnected from nature, especially in today's world where everything's so, you know, screen centric, whether it be smartphones and television. And so there's a great book called Last Child in the Woods by Richard Louv, and it coined this term called nature deficit disorder, where it can trace back some of the challenges we face at being of a lack of connection to nature, especially growing up as a young person. And so I think we definitely want folks getting outdoors and making those connections with the outdoors. But we want folks to do it safely, obviously. And I'm always just surprised at how little is covered in schools. Like, you would think some basic knowledge of safety, wilderness safety, outdoor safety should be covered in every school, but it's oftentimes not, more often than not covered. And just like you would think basic first aid would be a skill, or basic, managing your finances and budgeting should be in a public school, but instead a lot of the stuff gets forgotten or left out. And so, yeah, unfortunately, I mean, the fortunate thing is there are more people going in the outdoors because there's more people. I think we have our population's increasing all the time, but also folks get a false sense of security from their smartphones. And so, you know, the batteries die or they get out of range, and the next thing you know, they're in a sticky situation. Maybe they're lost or have an injury. And so there's more lost person searches than ever now. And it's unfortunate that people do perish every year in the outdoors. And so, I mean, that's part of why I wrote this book, is just trying to make this education more accessible for folks. And a lot of the survival books that I grew up on are now, you know, outdated, and they're black and white, or the information isn't up to date. And, you know, and then some other books are just filled with so many different things. Like, they try to cover 300 skills, but they don't give you enough information on any of them to actually do them. So this book tries to solve that by being a current book, up to date, over 100 color photographs. And instead of trying to cover 300 skills, we're covering just the essentials, but at a depth where you could go out and perform them, like make an emergency shelter, purify your water, make a fire, forage for some foods if you needed to, put together your survival kit, have some basic navigation. So, you know, all the things that I think anyone should have if you're going to spend time in the outdoors.
And it sounds like, from what I read, you're condensing this. This isn't like an encyclopedia of how to survive in the woods. It's more, it's kind of like a Leave No Trace approach to it. We're going to simplify this in a way that people will read this, understand it, and then incorporate it into their outdoor experiences.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a quick read, you know, about 165 pages. It's got like really concise instructions. I've got a little story to start each chapter. And I think it's fun for folks to go through, but also just a quick perusal, and you're already picking up new things that are going to be helpful to your awareness and for your planning for spending time in the outdoors. And I'll also say, like, these are also the foundational principles that would help you out if you were stuck in a natural disaster at home, too. Like, if a hurricane comes through your area or any type of, you know, natural disaster, and you have to leave your home, like, these are the foundational skills that you'd want to know for surviving, not just in the wilderness, but surviving in general. Like, we always need to stay warm and have shelter. We need clean water to drink. We need food. You know, these are all human needs, regardless of whether we're in the outdoors or not.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using the permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors. You know, it's interesting. I'll go back to, like, you were in Scouts and what you learned there. And we're not learning, our kids aren't learning basic first aid in school. And right. there are people who can share experiences of all generations where if they were in Scouts, they may have learned a skill. Even though it was an outdoor organization, they may have learned a skill that saved somebody's life. Like, I have a good friend who has a story about how he was in Scouts. He learned basic first aid while he was on his way home from school one day and saw a kid get hit by a car. Ran over, noticed blood was gushing out of the kid's leg, without even thinking twice, took his shirt off and put pressure on the wound. When he got there, the police officer said, "Why did, you know, I'm just curious, why did you do that, or how did you know to do it?" And he said, "Well, I learned how to do it in Scouts." And then the police officer said, "Well, you saved that kid's life."
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So when you're, when I'm listening to you, I'm like, you know, yeah, I mean, you learn these skills because, yeah, maybe when you're out on a recreation hike, you find yourself in that oh crap moment and you need to survive for the night out in the woods. Or as we're all learning right now, watching what's happening in Florida right in front of us, you may need it right in your own backyard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, when I was putting together this book, it's just disheartening to hear about situations like some of the hurricanes that came through Puerto Rico and people died from drinking tainted water, you know, leptospirosis tainted water, where if they simply knew to boil it, to purify it, it wouldn't have had to their lives. And similarly, like when there was the big power outages and deep freeze in Texas, I think it was like over 200 people died from hypothermia. You know, if you just knew a little bit about staying warm and shelter building, you can take a room in your house and bring all your blankets and sleeping bags and in there and keep one room warm enough so that you're not going to get hypothermic. You know, there's strategies. But unfortunately, like I said, it's not general knowledge in the public. Like common sense isn't common anymore necessarily. And also with groups like the Scouts being smaller than what they used to be, there's not as many young people getting these outdoor skills, you know, unfortunately. And so I think we really need, like one of my mentors said, you know, his vision is that he hopes that everybody develops a connection to nature, that there's a naturalist in every family and there's a nature school in every community, similar to how there's like martial arts schools in every community, but we're a long way off from that. There's still this big like cultural disconnection from nature and these wilderness skills. And so there's a lot of room for it. And that's kind of how I got started with teaching these longer courses for college age students to kind of train them to be instructors at other schools and parks, because I saw like the thing that was preventing more programs from happening is just not having enough trained people ready to do it. And so we trained a lot of folks. It was a school year program, 9 months. You could get a year's worth of undergraduate credit and integrate it into a 4-year degree. And so now a lot of them are, like I said, teaching their own programs or working at other parks and things like that.
I just think that's so important. We don't want to scare people from enjoying the outdoors. I'm a big believer in the more people that are out there enjoying it, the safety in numbers, right? When it comes time to raise our voices because a person in a position of authority wants to bulldoze or build houses on pristine land, well, we need more voices. And I think by educating people, and that's the key, as an educator, you know as well as I do, it's all about educating people.
Yes. Yeah. I can't remember how the quote goes, but something to the effect of, you know, that once we understand something, we'll appreciate it and then we'll want to take care of it and protect it. You know, so I think these wilderness skills are just a great doorway into being better stewards of the natural landscapes around us.
And Jason, in my time as a volunteer with the Boy Scouts, I led a high adventure program for, I think it was 5 years. And so I had adults and teenagers. You know, these were for boys that were 14 years and older. It's almost contagious. Once they start to learn some of these skills, you've mm-hmm. got their attention to want to learn more, or they're coming to you and asking to learn more about them.
Yep, absolutely. You know, and it's something that I believe it's in our DNA. Like all of our ancestors were super connected to the landscape when they lived as hunter-gatherers. They could interpret the weather. They knew what plants were edible and which ones were medicinal, which ones were poisonous. They could interpret the tracks that they saw. They knew all the birds on their landscape, and they had this deep connection with nature. And it's something that when you start sharing this with young people or at our adults, you know, folks just light up. Like the look on someone's face when they make their first friction fire from a bow drill, yeah. Branches they've made, it's just, It's just unbelievable. It's like Tom Hanks in the Castaway movie, right? Like, I made fire.
I've seen adults get as excited as kids when they do that.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We see that every year. We run those survival classes all year round. And, or to harvest wild edible plants and make a meal out of it. It's just so empowering and exciting. And, I like what Jim Corbett says. He says the book of nature has no beginning. It has no end, which means you can never know it all. Like, there's always going to be more things to learn about the natural landscape around us. So it creates this lifelong curiosity and love of learning, which, the great thing I see with a lot of young people is that it sparks that flame where they become, self-motivated learners. And then whether they go into a nature-related field or not, they oftentimes go off like just motivated to learn and teach themselves and explore and do research. And so I think it's just a very, motivating skill set, that connection with nature that enacts something, lights something in our DNA to help us be fully human and alive.
Something about, being out there maybe reconnects us, right? Where there's this connection of, this is maybe how I should be doing things. I'm not meant to be sitting at a kitchen table where I take things out of a box and throw them in a microwave, right? We're out there foraging for food. There's probably something deep rooted in our DNA that makes us feel like this is right. And I should be doing more of this.
Yeah. And it's like, I think it's a lot different. Like when sometimes in school, the way they teach about the outdoors, they might teach nitrogen cycles or carbon cycles. And when it's very theoretical and scientific, it's not as visceral as like eating a plant or sleeping in a shelter you built, or flint napping an arrowhead. Like all of those things are what give you that tangible connection to the outdoors that I think builds a stronger desire to take care of it.
I agree. It started with me at a very young age. I was in high school and I was very fortunate to have a biology teacher in the 10th grade who was the faculty advisor for the environmental club in the school. We had actually had an environmental club. He would take us out on a camp out every summer when school got out. And learning things. Like I remember the first time he was showing us about edible plants, and took off this branch and here, chew on this, and let's taste it. And it actually had this flavor to it, this like sweet flavor to it. And how, awesome that was, and how the next year I couldn't wait to get back out and learn more about it. And we went somewhere where we were able to find fossils. And he was a science teacher. So of course he loved it when we'd find something and then explaining it to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome.
And you don't get that in a classroom. Like I said, I was fortunate because if I had just gone through school, I've been backpacking since I was 7, so I might have gone out and done more backpacking, but it was the experiences that teacher provided us with as young people that sparked this, not just I'm going to go walking through the woods, but I want to take in everything that's out there and have a knowledge of what's there, what can help me and what could even possibly be dangerous to me.
Right. Yeah, it's so important these days. And like the thing that surprises me so much is like how many of the traditional universities and colleges have really like cut back their field trips and expeditions and outdoor activities, oftentimes because, maybe the insurance is too complicated or expensive to do that anymore, or there's just an emphasis on like learning computer-aided mapping skills or applying complex math to population studies. And so you'll get folks that even graduate with biology degrees that have barely spent any time in the field. They don't have survival skills. They can't identify the plants or birds. They can't navigate. And I remember one of my wildlife biologist jobs that I did, I got hired out of a pool of like 150 because I had these outdoor skills. They knew they could like drop me in the wilderness. I wasn't going to get lost. I could take care of myself if a situation came up. I could already identify the plants and the birds and the tracks and all those things that they needed me to do. And it's just a shame that's not being taught at regular schools, but it's also created a niche for us. Like as Alderleaf, we get a lot of folks who are already biologists or maybe they're in college for an environmental education degree. And they come here to augment their training with a lot of hands-on skills that we do integrate that with their current education or their current work or their future work.
I think that's great. Teaching teachers. So they're able to bring that back into their classrooms and maybe they can spark, gatherings or, even if the school doesn't have a sanctioned or organized group that goes out and goes on these field trips, maybe it sparks somebody to do this and take that knowledge they got from you, they received at your school and share and keep things moving along that way. Because it's a shame, but for young people, and that's where it's important, getting people, get that interest when people are young, but there's not a lot out there for them. They're not offering it in the schools. And as you said, the Scouts is a small organization and maybe even getting smaller.
Right. Right. You know, and then on the positive side, like a lot of these nature schools are filling some of that gap. You know, like there's one school down in Portland. And I believe they're seeing Trackers Earth is seeing like 90,000 kids per summer now. So that's starting to rival some of the numbers that the Scouts had back in their heyday in the 70s and 80s. You know, there's a school, Earth Native, down out of Austin. That's I don't even know how many kids they're up to now. I'm pretty sure it's in the thousands of kids every summer. Let's see, upstate New York has Hawk Circle. There's Earthwork programs in central Massachusetts. So when I got started in this field, there really were only like a handful of survival schools in the country. And now there seems to be like 5 to 10 in almost every state. I mean, especially here on the East Coast and the West Coast, around population centers, you know, a little bit around the Great Lakes and down in Texas as well. So I see that on the move growing. You know, there's a movement for like forest preschools and yeah, these nature programs that get kids out, whether it's on breaks or on the weekends or in the summertime. So some of those are growing. But I know there's also some that are struggling as well. Like my understanding is that like Outward Bound and Knowles are maybe seeing lower enrollment sometimes. So they've been around for a number of decades and they get kids in the outdoors as well. But I just want to see this continue to grow. And that's part of why we've been doing what we did. Like for so long, we focused on these 9-month programs, but we were only seeing like maybe 60 students a year broken into 3 cohorts in those 9-month courses. And then our weekend classes started to grow. We maybe see another 1,000 or so in our other classes each year. But we have so many folks like visiting our site. Like we get about 1,000 people visiting our site per day. And most of them are like, oh, I can't come out to Washington to take a class. Like, how can I get started with this? And that's why we created our online course about 6 years ago. And that's been especially popular during the pandemic. There was a period of time where we weren't even allowed to run in-person classes. So we kind of directed everyone to the online course. But then the other, you know, thing that we've heard feedback we've heard from folks, you know, visiting our site and joining our mailing list is like, you know, it's an affordability issue of being able to get into this training and education, which was a big part of motivating me to put together the book, is that the book makes it that much more affordable. And I mean, reaching out to libraries so that they can carry it as well, because I mean, nothing can replace in-person classes and training, but the book can at least spark that passion, get you started. And it certainly helped me. Like I, you know, I had been in the Scouts, but then I had stumbled across these survival books, and it was the survival books I ran across that like really got me, trying to figure out some of the stuff at home, which some of it I was successful with and some of it I wasn't with. And I found a club and I found some classes and then integrated into my college degree and then got hired at some of these schools and, you know, led to my wildlife biology work, but, and now running Alderleaf. So it's one of those things that one thing can lead to another. But it takes something to like spark that start that initial spark. And if it's a cost barrier or a travel barrier or distance barrier, like this book really, you know, makes it you know, that much easier for almost anyone to get started and learn new things as well. Like I've had so many folks, we had some early readers of the book, and like a lot of experienced outdoors people said they learned a bunch of new stuff from the book and really appreciate it. And a lot of folks are getting it as gifts for like nephews and nieces and family members and friends for the holidays. So yeah, I'm excited because I feel like when I got started in this field, there were some popular survival books that were maybe getting picked up a little bit by popular culture and there was interest. And then I don't know if there is a book like that currently that does that. So yeah, I'm hoping to inspire and inform and educate and hopefully, you know, really get this out to a wide audience because I think our culture really needs it.
Well, as I said earlier, Jason, I've been doing this for a long time and I always look for something new to read because things change. As you pointed out, even the way we do first aid. When I was first taught wilderness first aid, I think back in the 80s, it might've been, or early 90s, the way they're doing things now is different than what they were 30 something years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have backpacking books from the early 70s and you read through those, you're like, holy crap, people were really doing that. And they were really carrying that with them into the woods, right? Or, you know, doing things that way. So especially when it comes to first aid skills and outdoor skills, things just keep changing.
Yeah. And things are so much more lightweight and compact now. So, like, I mean, you can go on a backpacking trip with much less volume and weight. Same thing with, like, packing some survival equipment. You know, like, nowadays we have these things called survival straws, which is like a filter packed into
right.
a tiny little package that would fit into any backpack easily. You know, so you can instantly have water purification wherever you go.
Yeah. On that note, I want to bring this up about the book, The Essential Skill of Wilderness Survival. This isn't just for somebody who wants to go out and spend a night and pretend they're on an episode of Survival or Naked and Afraid. This could, I think anybody who even is going out on day hikes should probably read this book.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is like the core essential skills that anyone who spends time in the outdoors should have. And really, I think everybody should have. I mean, this would be, you know, it could be great reading in like any high school, I think, would enjoy having it because, again, it's not an encyclopedia. It's not going into all the, you know, minutia detail of you know, how to do all kinds of specific skills. This is the core skills that you want to know as a human being that would help you in a natural disaster or in the outdoors on a day hike.
As we both know, anything can happen. Experienced hikers slip and get hurt or get lost, right? There's plenty of stories of experienced hikers who take a wrong turn, read the map a little wrong. But that knowledge is what brings them back safely and alive.
Yes. Yeah, when I was putting together the book, I was reflecting on some of the things that inspired me about survival. And one of them was I had a close call on a hike, actually up in New England in the White Mountains, Mount Adams, when I was a teenager. A buddy and I had hiked it when we were 17. And a storm moved in right when we were close to the top, sideways blowing wind, sleet, the whole thing. And suddenly we couldn't go back down the way we came up because we went up a steep route that was required a lot of bouldering. And then my friend slipped on the slippery rocks at the top and injured his ankle. And it was very difficult to find the alternate trail to find our way back down. And we were starting to get quite hypothermic. And it took us the rest of the afternoon and into the evening to find our way off the mountain. And luckily, we got back to the cars around midnight and got home safely. But we were really fortunate. And while I was going back through my memories and putting together the story for the book, just around the same time, this last June, an experienced hiker in his 50s perished on those same mountains. Similar situation. It was June, good weather down at the base, getting started, gets up to the top, and terrible sleet and snow moves in. And he called for search and rescue, and search and rescue was organized, and they started to go out there to find him. And then by the time they reached him, he had already perished from hypothermia. They weren't able to revive him. And with just some, more additional survival skills, like with some, whether you bring it's a survival kit or know what to do if you don't have a kit, lives don't have to be lost that way out in the woods. What I do in the book is I talk about, what you can do to make a kit to be prepared, to have items with you that would help keep you safe. But I especially talk about how to manage without any equipment at all, how you can make the things you need just from what you find in nature. Because so many survival situations, I'd say probably the majority of them are in situations where you didn't expect to be in a survival situation. So you weren't packing a survival kit with you. You don't have any equipment to work with. And I think it's really important to know then how do you make the shelter from natural materials if you don't have a tent and a sleeping bag? Or how do you make fire from friction if you don't have a lighter or matches or a ferro rod? Or how do you purify your water if you don't have that filter or your iodine tablets? So that's really what the book is about, is it's both how to do it with and without gear, because there's so many situations where being able to improvise is super important.
Well, and there's always that chance that your gear could be damaged, lost. There's stories of people doing stream crossings or if you're into water activities, kayaking or canoeing, your gear can be washed downstream. And you might find yourself out there an entire day away from getting to a road crossing or getting back to your car. You have to, you need those skills to say, okay, how do I build a shelter and keep myself warm?
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. With only what you have, what you're wearing.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Like a lot of folks are like, how is that possible? Like I've built debris huts that I've stayed in, and it's gone down to single digits at night. It snowed while I was in there. I had no idea. And, I was, safe as can be inside there. Granted, it's not as comfortable as sleeping in your own bed by any means, but it's enough to keep you alive, And then you can make fancy shelters that are really fun to stay in too. Like there's group shelters, like a debris teepee, or you have a little fire on the inside. And it's just magical being in one of these stick shelters that you made yourself with your friends. you know, cook around the campfire and things like that.
And Scouts, they have the Wilderness Survival Merit Badge. And my kids, when they would take it, we got to the point where we started having a Wilderness Survival camp out every fall. And they can only bring with them what they could fit in a coffee can, one of the big coffee cans. And that's what they, you know, it was volunteer, not the whole troop had to, but those kids were really into the Wilderness Survival stuff. So meaning, you know, everything you need better fit in there, because you're going to have to make your own shelter and all kinds of things. You know, if you're going to eat, you better be able to fit it in that can. You know, if you need a knife, it better fit in that can.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun to watch how into it these kids were and how much they enjoyed the challenge.
That's great. That's a lot of things that folks don't realize. It oftentimes is really fun. I mean, survival experiences can be miserable, but you can also make practicing them fun. And like, you're only going to practice them if they're fun. Like, if you go out to practice and you put yourself in a miserable situation, you may not want to go out and keep practicing. Like, somebody new might not continue learning. But when you make it fun like that, you know, that's what keeps you engaged and going and continue to learn. And that's what we do with our courses. Like, with our like weekend classes open to the public, like, we just we have a classroom here on site. We have a bathroom, and we take a lunch break, and folks bring bag lunches. So I mean, we keep everything doable and achievable so that no one's suffering through a class. But on like our 9-month course, where we do a survival trip at the end of the year, you know, we're training folks to get to that point throughout the whole year and preparing them for that. So by the time we get to that trip, folks have the skills where the trip is manageable, it's doable. We keep it interesting enough where they'll want to hopefully continue to practice and push their skills further. But like you said, I think that's a testament to good teaching that your kids wanted to keep going back out and do more survival trips each fall.
Well, as an adult, I felt those were the experiences that were keeping my skills at par.
Yeah.
Because every time they wanted to do something like that, as an adult volunteer, I better make sure my skills are where they need to be. So I find myself sharpening my skills, going over navigation things, making sure I know how to tie my knots, and going back to what you're, you know, what part of what you're doing at the school is teaching teachers, helping they go out and either start schools or bring it into a classroom. Mm-hmm. We're helping ourselves too when we're doing this. We're keeping our skills sharp.
Yep. Absolutely. There's no better way to retain these skills than to teach them to somebody else, share them with someone else. You know, that's why I tell my students, whether you decide to formally become a teacher, if you just share it with a friend or a family member, you'll remember it that much better. And that reminds me that the other thing that's amazing about the times we live in now is because there's been so many survival shows that have come out over the last 20 years, it's fantastic that there's a greater awareness amongst the general public of the value of wilderness skills and bushcraft and survival that is no longer like before those shows. If you hadn't been in the Scouts or read a book, you know, if you told someone you were into survival skills, they'd think you were kind of strange, or they'd wonder like, what are you doing? And, you know, and now there's a lot more like cultural, like, awareness of the skill set and how fascinating it can be. And we've had a lot of colleagues go on those different shows, Alone and Dual Survival, Naked and Afraid, things like that. And so it's fascinating. And, you know, at the same time, not all those shows always are a good source of like educational material, necessarily like the right things to do. Like, you certainly don't want to be running full speed at night when you can't see, or jumping off cliffs at night into water and things like that. So it's important also to, like, if you're going to plan out and go out on outdoor trips or do some survival training, to, you know, get quality education through like respected field guides and teachers and books and classes and such, rather than just relying on TV.
Right. Knowing not to take those unnecessary risks when you could be there for a long, long time, right? Even something like a broken ankle, if you're 5 or 6 miles from a trailhead, it could take a rescue crew a long time to get to you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And if you're surviving in place for 5 days or a week and no one's found you yet, that's when you really have to start thinking about navigating your way out, because a lot of search and rescue operations are called off after a week. If they're unsuccessful after a week, they oftentimes get scaled back or called off. There's a really sad case of someone hiking the Appalachian Trail who got turned around at night when they left the trail to go to the bathroom. And so they got turned around, ended up about a mile from the trail, but didn't know which way the trail was. And so they said, well, I've got my camping gear. I'll just stay and survive in place, and search and rescue will come and find me. Well, they didn't find her remains till a couple of years later. She had stayed in place and kept a journal, and basically, after her food ran out, basically starved to death after 2 months. Only a mile from where the trail was. So, there's a lot of things like this in survival where, like, yes, if you get lost, it makes sense to stay in place, especially if you told someone where you're going and when you expect to be out, because it's easier for search and rescue to find you when you're closer to the last points where they know you to be. Whether if you're it's harder to find a moving target, especially start moving out of the area of your last known point. But if you're surviving in place for a week and nobody's found you, or you didn't failed to tell anyone where you were going when you planned to be out, then you need to think about navigating your way out while surviving at the same time.
Right. At some point you got to make the call that, okay, I've been sitting here for this much time and nobody's found me. So let me try to use some navigation skills and get myself back to a point of reference or a landmark that might be easier for search and rescue people to find, or trying to get yourself down to a road crossing.
Yeah, I always think of, no matter what outdoor area you go into, I always tell folks, have your backup plan of a direction you can go that will definitely eventually take you to safety the quickest. For example, like where I live, there's a highway and a river that runs east-west. And so if I get lost in this vast wilderness behind me of the Cascade Mountain foothills, if I super turn, as long as I go north, I'm going to run into that river and highway eventually, and that will be your way out. And almost any wilderness you go into has that, like that boundary that you can use as a guardrail and then get your way back to civilization.
Yeah, that's something I've always told people, is that take time to look at your maps. Know where your bailout points are, is what I call them.
Yeah.
Know where they are. If I'm going out this summer I was on the Tahoe Rim Trail. I studied that map. So I knew if I got lost, okay, if I hike in this direction, eventually I will get to this road where I can get out of the woods safely. Or if there's a reason I have to get off the trail, somebody's hurt, somebody's sick, here's where I can get off the trail and get help.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's just your pre-trip planning, right? It's just a part of what your pre-trip planning should be, looking over those maps and understanding where it is you will be hiking.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And carrying the map and compass, even if you have a phone, even if you have a GPS, it's like bring the paper map and the compass, know how to use it. Super important. And then that also aidless navigation. Like if you were to happen to lose everything, lose your map and compass, know what your aidless navigation techniques are for finding the four directions. Like maybe you can remember that, oh, I just need to go north to find my way out. But then how do you know which way is north, and, be able to navigate by the sun position or finding the North Star at night. Those are all valuable skills. Which, back on when we were talking about the survival shows, one of the interesting things is that they are teaching things to people as well. And some of that has actually come into play. I got interviewed by the news a couple of years back when there was a small, like, single engine plane that crashed in the North Cascades. And this teenager made it out alive, amazingly. And what happened is that the plane had got, they're coming from Spokane, I believe, back over to the west side, and hit some weather or clouds. Plane crashed and the grandparents didn't make it. But the teenager survived, and she was hanging out by the crash for a couple of days, but no search and rescue came. And she remembered from seeing some survival shows that if no one comes to your rescue, you probably need to navigate your way out. And if you really are lost and don't know which way you need to go, one of your options is to try to go downhill till you find water and then follow water downstream. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes that leads you back to civilization. And that's what she did. It took her a few days, but eventually one creek led to a bigger creek, led to a bigger one. And she eventually made it down far enough to where she hit a highway and was able to be picked up and taken to the hospital and survived that. Even though she was young, she was a teenager, didn't have any formal survival training, she'd remembered watching some survival shows with her dad and used what she knew to make her way out that way.
Jason, with your book, I'm really happy to see new literature on this topic come out. As I started off saying early on, sometimes we feel like we're preaching to the choir when we're talking about what you need to do to keep yourself safe. Leave no trace. I just put a YouTube up today of people just left a mess at the trailhead. I'm trying not to rant too much, but I can't help it sometimes. But I just think when people are spreading the word, writing books like you are, and what you're doing with your school, I think it just helps the entire outdoor community, not just hikers and backpackers, but everybody that goes out and enjoys the outdoors.
Awesome. Thanks. I hope so. I hope so.
Jason, we want to buy your book. How can we find it? How do we go about this?
It's on Amazon right now. So if you go on Amazon, The Essential Skills of Wilderness Survival by Jason Knight, you can find it on Amazon. Hopefully it'll be showing up on a lot of other bookstores as well. I think it might be in Barnes and Nobles now. IndieBound and bookshop.org are two websites that help you find it from local bookstores. So if you want to support local independent bookstores, it should be populating there soon. But I know for certain it's on Amazon, and we're running a 20% off sale on it.
That's great. I will be reading your book. I've read about it and unfortunately haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I will be reading it. As I said, I'm always looking to sharpen my skills. And when it comes to first aid, things like first aid and wilderness survival, things are changing constantly. And I'm always looking for the newest information. So everybody, if you're going out, even if you consider yourself just a day hiker, keep yourself informed. That's your first and best course of being safe out there.
Yeah. And if folks want a simple way to get a taste of the book, they can go onto our website, wildernesscollege.com. And we have a little mini guide that's 8 pages. So the book is, 165. I got a little 8-page, little tiny mini guide, but it gives you a taste of kind of what we do. And we produce a lot of how-to articles on our website that we've got. I think we're over 300 articles now on different wilderness skills that we teach. So there's a lot of free resources for folks to take advantage of as well.
Before we finish up, Jason, I just want to say this or ask you this. When you do a wilderness survival skill, when you get out there and build your own shelter or you've foraged for food, there's a certain amount of empowerment, right? You've a certain amount of fulfillment, like, wow, I can do this. Do you get that feeling when you're out there, when you do those things?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I have an 11-year-old daughter. So it's been like my favorite thing is sharing these skills with her. Like she, even from when, once she was big enough to walk around on her 2 feet, like 2 and 3, she was running around and showing other people up here, other visitors, like what edible berries you could eat. She's like loves the wild edible berries that grow here. And she loves getting out and making fires and practicing her bow and arrow and different things like that. And so it's super, I mean, I enjoy it personally. It's empowering to do these skills on your own, but it's even more to like get out with friends and practice or to share it with somebody and being able to pass that down to my daughter has been probably one of the most exciting things I've been doing over the last number of years.
Yeah, I have 3 boys and they're all adults. And when we go out on a camp out or backpacking trip, you'll know when your daughter gets older. Wow, what a feeling when you sit back and watch them do the things you taught them to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Getting out with hikes with her. It's awesome. It's funny, like sometimes, on hikes, it's like about sometimes you're like, you have an end goal in mind. You're like wanting to, you have only a limited time to get there. But like when you start to like grow this nature awareness and this deep nature connection, like there's so much to look at the way. And oftentimes you don't get to your destination because you found, oh, look, there's these cool berries that are in season. Let's harvest some. Or, oh, look, this bear trail goes off this way. Let's find out where it went. And like, there's so many cool distractions, but to me, it's more about that journey more than the destination. It's about the experiences you have along the way and the connections you make and the growth that happens there more so than maybe necessarily making it to your end goal at the end of the trip or something like that.
Oh, that is so true. Right. And I've said this to people and I wrote about this. We need to enjoy the journey, embrace the journey. And the destination should be the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. That's fantastic.
Well, everybody, buy this book. I think we all should be keeping ourselves sharp on our survival skills. And as Jason has talked about, you might find yourself using these skills in your everyday life. You just never know what can happen. Natural disasters, right in your own backyard, right in your own community, these things can happen. Or maybe you're just somebody who likes to go out and do a lot of day hiking. You might find yourself out there late one night and maybe this knowledge gives you that confidence that I'll make it back to my car. I'm okay. I read Jason Knight's book. I'm good. So I highly recommend this. I will read the book. I was motivated to buy it after I started reading about it. I said, oh, this this is something we all can use. We can all use some more help on. Jason Knight, thank you so much for coming on the Papa Bear Hikes podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Everybody, get outside, have some fun. Read Jason Knight's book so you can be safe. Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe. This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.